Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good. Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line Podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Tillatoba, Mississippi. I am headed down Interstate 55. Joining me on the other end of the line, Spence. It is Friday.
Yeah, man, what's happening?
I saw that picture you just posted.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the back porch enjoying the Natter Days.
Is that what that was?
Yes. If you have not had a Natter Days, you are missing a big portion of Americana in your life, and you should instantly go to the grocery store and buy yourself a case of Natter Days and celebrate life.
That strawberry lemonade natural light.
Yes. I mean, you could call it that. You could also call it heaven. There's a lot of names you could use for it. Perfection. It's a delicious. So Natter Days, the story on Natter Days, I'll give you a little background. We just went to South Carolina on a turkey hunting trip, and there's all kinds of little, there's like a whole community of people that turkey hunt and travel, and they travel because turkey season never lasts long enough at your home, right? So in Tennessee, turkey season lasts about 45 days, but typically it's only good about 30 of those 45 days. Well, 1 month just not enough, and so if you start early, you can start in Florida first weekend in March, and you can shoot one all the way up until June 1st or 2nd in the upper Northeast. So I mean, if you play your cards right, you can hunt turkeys if you travel for 4 months out of the year. It just requires a lot of driving. Well, one of my friends that I've met through traveling is a guy out of South Carolina named Michael Boozer. And he's a raging Clemson fan. He's a successful businessman, and he thinks about turkeys 365 days a year. He is so much fun to turkey hunt with, and he's just one of many, many characters in the turkey world, you know. And but anyways, Boozer has some traditions. He's real kind of, he's almost religious about his turkey hunting. And the first tradition that he introduced me to, which is just fantastic, is he carries little airplane shooters of Wild Turkey 101 in his vest. Like, when I say he carries them in his vest, like, he probably has anywhere between, I don't know, a half a dozen to a dozen in his vest. And if you kill a turkey, you stop what you're doing right there and you take a airplane shooter shot of Wild Turkey 101, because there's no more noble creature in creation that deserves to be toasted upon his demise than the wild turkey. And no fine spirit is more aptly named than Wild Turkey 101. So, you know, you shoot a turkey 7:15 off the limb and you take a shot of wild turkey, that's a good start to the day. And I don't mean literally right off the limb, but I just mean when it works out, textbook, you know. And
right.
And there's a whole like cult following of people that do this. And I mean, there's, I know of 40 or 50 that do this, and man, it's fun. It's almost kind of like, it's kind of like the Dave Owens thing, smoking a cigar. I mean, it's just a, it's just like, all right, let's push pause. It's not just a drinking game, you know. It's like, let's push pause and go, okay, this was an unbelievable experience. Let's celebrate this experience. No different than Jesus at the, you know, when he turned water into wine at the wedding, you know. I mean, he's at a wedding. Weddings are not, you know, you don't drink water at a wedding. You drink wine at a wedding. You celebrate this momentous occasion. And so you got you a dead turkey right there, and you celebrate with Wild Turkey 101. So, all right, so that's a big backstory to tell you that a couple weeks ago I'm in South Carolina, and Jared and I go, and we kill a turkey that morning with Boozer, and we have our Wild Turkey shots, and we're celebrating. It's fantastic. We walk back to the truck, and Boozer goes, I got a new celebration, boys. And we're like, what's that? And he goes, opens up his Yeti, and there's this whole cooler full of these pink beers. And he goes, nothing washes down the taste of Wild Turkey any better than a Natterdays. And sure enough, I mean, I've had a few breakfast beers, but there's no better breakfast beer on the market than a Natterdays. So, anyways.
Hey, speaking of South Carolina, there's a lot of people that's been following the what's going on with your truck. Your truck is still sitting in South Carolina right now, right?
actually, 52 minutes ago, it just got delivered. And it was a cluster of epic proportions, but it is in Somerville, Tennessee, sitting in my driveway as we speak.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a I don't know if
did Bobby Joe Ragsdale go get it for you?
No. Mm-mm. He blocked me the other day after he called me a dumbass and blocked me. And and I haven't had any communication with him since then. I'm somewhere between letting that hurt my feelings and trying to gather my composure from laughing. He's a piece of work.
That could have not been put any better.
Do you know the story on him? I mean, I don't mean to just drag this podcast out longer, but do you know the story on him? Because the story is absolutely unbelievable. Like, it deserves its own podcast series.
I don't. Please tell me.
All right, well, I'll tell you, I'll give it a good solid teaser, and you need to follow up with the whole story. So, Bobby Joe lives not too far outside of Humboldt, between Jackson and Humboldt, Tennessee. And a couple years ago, I don't know exactly how many, I'd say between 2 and 6 years ago, Jackson, Tennessee, on one of their country radio stations, had some kind of a local country music artist call in who's your favorite artist vote, almost like an American Idol kind of a thing, except on the radio, and they had to be local. Well, old Jonathan Warrington got a contingency of people. How he knows Bobby Joe, I couldn't tell you where they originally met, how they found each other, but Bobby Joe used to get on Facebook late at night, and he would sing country songs with the radio. And if you've ever watched any of these, he'd go live. If you've ever watched any of these, I mean, he has no paint on the walls inside his bedroom, no wallpaper. His wall is decorated with Sharpie drawings and signatures of various people that have, you know, darkened the door of his house. And I mean, I don't even know how to begin describing Bobby Joe. I'll just leave it at that. And so he got nicknamed Mr. Famous because he got down into, like, I'm going to get this wrong, but like the final four. You know, I mean, John was just campaigning, and they were making T-shirts and whatever. He, to this day, I think Bobby Joe believes that he is. I mean, he calls himself Mr. Famous. And they've had a couple big gatherings at his house called Bobaroo, you know, like a spinoff of Bonnaroo and Chattanooga, in the Chattanooga area. And so they'll have Bobaroo 2017, Bobaroo 2018, and I mean, it's the stories are all. I mean, if I had not watched them unfold on social media, honestly, I wouldn't believe them. But at one point, Bobby Joe proposed to a girl he met online through Facebook that lived in Ohio and moved up there to live with her. And they basically kidnapped him. Somehow her family was like in a, her brothers or something were in some kind of a drug ring, and they were going to use Bobby Joe to run drugs. And John and a couple other guys like went up there and basically like SEAL Team 6 evicted him, you know, got him, you know, plucked him out of harm's way and brought him back
home. I've never heard that.
Oh my gosh. Please, please, I'm texting you Jonathan Warrington's information right now. Please.
No, I've got his number, but I've never heard that one.
No, please contact Jonathan Warrington and arrange a Bobby Joe Ragsdale podcast hosted by John Warrington. Please.
Wow. Wait, there's a couple of famous positions, and Bobby Joe's biggest fan is probably is it Brandon Bailey and Matt Barnett? Because every time that I watch,
well, it's definitely Matt Barnett. Barnett is Bobby Joe's homie, H-O-M-I-I, and I dare you to go ahead and Urban Dictionary the term homie, H-I-M-I-I. Not H-O-M-I-E, H-O-M-I-I. Barnett's definitely Ragsdale's homie. Bailey is kind of on again, off again with the Ragsdale family. But John definitely should have a podcast about his story, he and Bobby Joe's story. And there's a group message between John and Barnett and Bailey and Rob Kroom and me. Basically, it all is about Bobby Joe. Although there hasn't been much communication since Bobby Joe told me to STFU. Right,
so what's the mom's name?
Hun.
Hun, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, all right, so when reality shows got popular years ago, they should have done one with the Ragsdale family.
Oh, man, the Ragsdales make Honey Boo Boo or whatever. They make them look like chumps. I mean, yeah, no doubt about it. Janice Ragsdale is a national treasure. I mean, she probably should be on the podcast with John and with – if you could get Rob – and John and Janice on the same podcast. I mean, all I know to tell you is look out foils, you know, those would be foils numbers.
So when Spencer talks about him doing these lives and he sings with the country music going, Facebook has actually put him in jail a couple of times for using copyrighted music in his videos.
Oh yeah.
But
well, that
when Spencer talks,
and go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, when you talk about his walls being drawn on, there's one position that he sits in front of his computer sometimes that right behind it, it's a penis on the wall. Drawn
on
a Sharpie.
Yeah, lots of that kind of stuff. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And not to change topics on you abruptly, but I just mentioned his name. I just want to, on a serious, very serious note, man, I want to give giant shout out to the Foils podcast you guys are doing. Holy cow, Rocky, that thing is incredible. I'm tooth and nail hanging on to every word, and I really appreciate y'all putting the time and the effort into bringing that thing to air. It's awesome. It scares the crap out of me, but it's awesome.
The numbers are unreal. The story, I knew the story was big, but not that big.
Mm-hmm.
Spence, so I got to ask you this before we jump back in the story. I did not know until every single day I try to get on Facebook and wish my friends a happy birthday. Both of your cameramen, their birthday is on the same day.
How crazy is that? That is nuts. Like, and what's crazy, what's even crazier, I guess, is we discovered that on the road. Like the South Dakota trip we talk about, picking up Dylan on the side of the interstate in his little purple or navy blue Scion, spoiler duct taped on, and everything he owned in the back seat. Right, we discovered that the next day. We're on the road, me and Josh are, and we wake up and, you know, hit the road, and Dawson's like, "Hey, it's my birthday." We're like, "Oh man, it's your birthday! Happy birthday, Dawson! How old are you, buddy?" You know, "I'm 22, 23, whatever." Dylan's sitting beside him in the back seat. And he's like, "Well, it's my birthday too." We're like, "No way! What are the odds?" Y'all are kidding us. I mean, we made them pull their driver's license out and prove it. And May 15th, they're 1 year apart. Dylan is 1 year older. Dylan was born in 94. Dawson was born in 95. But, yep, same birthday. Isn't that crazy?
That is nuts. I mean, mathematically, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, the odds of that are pretty far out there, for sure.
All right, well, look, when we left the story last week, you were about to get the first episode back.
Yep.
From the production company that you were working with, right?
Yeah, well, so I just hired an editor, one guy, and dude, he is incredible as an editor. I just want to say that. I'm going to tell you who he is, but before I tell you who he is, I'm going to tell you what he's done. And because I don't in any way want this to negatively reflect on him. I mean, he did an awesome job, and is way more than competent. What we learned was that there was a disconnect between what the camera guys are seeing through the lens and what we're envisioning, and the editor, and so and the finished product. So. You know, the last time we were talking, you were asking me questions about what, you know, the storyline and what you going into it, you think it's going to be, and then what it turns out. Well, the less people you have involved in that process of envisioning and conceptual status, you know, on the front end, that stage on the front end where you conceive of an idea and then you actually do something about it. You know, you film something, you go on a trip, whatever, and then you take it and edit it. Like, those are three different steps. Well, the smaller the number of people involved in those three stages, the more predictable your product is going to be, if that makes sense. So I was trying to answer your question about how many times do y'all, you know, how much is it scripted? How much is it after the fact? All that kind of stuff. Well, so we learned on the very first episode, we filmed this hunt. It was really good. And we had a couple other hunts, and it was good too. They were good too. So we kind of had a lot of content, but we didn't really know how to put the story with it. Well, we sent all this stuff off and to the guy who's going to edit it. And it came back, and Dylan and I watched it, and it was like, did a good job technically of editing it, but it just wasn't what we had envisioned. And so we're sitting there, and we'd literally gone to lunch, and we're on our way back to the office. We're sitting there in the truck, and we watched it together, and I was like, "Man, what do you think?" And he goes, "I don't like it." And I was like, "Man, I don't really like it either." And I said, I don't even know, what do we do about it? Like, and I'm going to say that this was like September the 29th, and the first episode was supposed to air on, say, October the 3rd or something. Like, and it was a Friday, and the episode was supposed to air on Tuesday, let's just say. Okay, so we were inside 5 days of the episode airing, and I was like, man. So on the one hand, like, I really liked the guy who was editing. I'd met with him a couple times. We had a bunch of mutual friends. And we had kind of hit it off, and I was like, man, when I tell this dude this is going to, I'm going to hurt his feelings. I'm going to, I don't know. And then at the same time, I was like, man, if we jump ship on episode one, what the heck are we going to do with episodes 2 through 6 or 2 through 9? You know, like what are we going to do? That, because the whole idea here was that we were going to, I wanted to be able to have my guys in the field filming stuff and ship the hard drive back somewhere to an office where somebody could edit it. And that way my guys in the field didn't have to try to edit it. Well, Dylan just looked at me and he said, man, he said, I think you need to call him and tell him we appreciate the work. We want to pay him for his time. And he said, I think you should give me a shot. And I was like,
well, that's okay. What I was going to ask you. That's what I was going to ask you. Was Dylan prepared to, I mean, has he learned to edit school-wise?
I don't know.
Done stuff?
Oh, heck no. No, he went to school to be a sports and business marketing or something like that. I mean, he was a baseball player. So he got whatever degree he could get. And I can't remember what it was, but it was like sports management or sports marketing, or it might as well have been PE. I mean, he got a degree because he played baseball for 4 years. But he didn't know. I mean, he had kind of dilly-dallied in Premiere and a couple of the other editing softwares. And so, I mean, he knew how to edit at this point. Okay. He had edited, basically, he came to work for me in May, and this is the end of September. So it had been 5-6 months that he had gone through old hard drives and stuff that Dawson had filmed and stuff that other guys had filmed and tried to make what he could out of stuff. And he'd done some, you know, he got Photoshop downloaded onto his computer. And so he'd gone through some images and he'd messed with our social media some. And basically, I mean, that summer I had him just kind of doing odds and ends kind of marketing stuff. And he'd done some stuff for me at the clinic. We were in the middle of construction at the clinic. And so, for maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 times through that summer, he produced a little episode that was kind of like, you know, me walking through the construction site with this is what this room's going to be, and this is what this room's going to be, and kind of just basically teasing the marketing of what we were building there. But I mean, by and large, no. I mean, Dylan had not edited anything that was story related. He'd taken some old footage that from other camera guys and edited a little bit, but this was completely different because this was, number one, this was his footage. Number two, we had two other camera angles. So both of these really good hunts that we had, the best one and the other one, we had three cameras going. Dylan was filming behind us. We had a guy in the blinds with us, and we had a guy on a tripod with the long lens sitting out to the side. And so we had a lot of footage from those three hunts. And Dylan had a vision in his mind. That's really what this story is all about. And so we watched it, and I'm like, what do you think we should do? And Dylan said, I think you should give me a shot. And I said, okay. And I said, you really think you got this? And he was like, just give me a chance. And I said, okay. And I said, man, you know, if you do this and you do it well, I'm willing to do this, but I got to have you running the camera. So I don't know how you're going to have time to run the camera and edit. You know, do whatever you want about that. Because we had three options. One option was call the guy and be like, man, you know, you did great, but this is just not really our vision. Second option was to try to say, this is not our vision. Here's what we'd like you to do with the footage, like basically a list of edits. And the third option was bail on him completely, pay him for his time, tell him how much we love him and try to still be friends, and then let Dylan do it. And so Dylan said, you know, give me a shot. And I said, okay. And it was a Friday afternoon. I said, you got till Monday morning. And I said, you know, Monday morning, I'm calling him and I'm either making a list of edits or I'm going to say, Dylan did a version of this and I think it's what I'm going to use. And I think I'm going to let him edit it. So long weekend goes by. And Monday morning, you know, Dylan calls me. Actually, it was in the wee hours of the night, Sunday night. he starts sending me stuff, and he FaceTimed me, and we watched it, and I was like, holy crap, man. Like, that's really good. And it was different. It wasn't like, wasn't TV show like. It wasn't like, there was no interview. There was no kind of, I don't know. It was just like the things that I love about September goose season, you know? And we kind of centered it around the idea that, what drives you, what motivates you, what keeps you coming back for more. And honestly, like the most fun part of September goose season is that you scout real hard, you know, you're going to kill them. And then you make a plan, you get everybody together. And in those moments before the sun comes up and before you hear the first goose, there's this tension between, you know, in your heart, you're about to absolutely annihilate them, smash them. I mean, it's about to be a day for the books. But then on the other hand, it's dead quiet and your buddies hadn't seen what you've seen. And so there's this tension of, dude, what if they don't fly today? Or what if they just go a different direction? What if they all get up off their roost and they go east instead of west or north instead of south? And you lay there, and then at some point, about 20 minutes after you think they're never coming, you hear a glup, 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 and then there they are. They're on you. And, you know, boom, you shoot that group. And before you can even pick them up, boom, shooting another group. And then, you know, everybody's running out there and picking them up, and you shoot another group, shoot another group, shoot another group. And it's just so fast. It goes from just dead calm to just chaos, mass chaos. And so we kind of built the voiceover around what keeps you coming back for more. And it's like this tension between, is it going to happen, and mass chaos. And what we love about waterfowl hunting is it's life in between those two tensions, you know, between it's dead calm, you're waiting on the sun to come up, and all you, there's literally nothing else. You're all ready, you're all set, you've scouted as hard as you could, and there's nothing else to do but just sit there and wait. And in your waiting, you're torn between optimism and pessimism, and everybody has experienced that. Whether it's public or private that you're hunting, whether it's the crummiest rice field or White Oaks duck woods, or whether it's, doesn't matter. Like, everybody has had that moment of still and calm after everything is set where you have nothing to do but worry. And there's like literally nothing that summarizes the early goose season better than that. And I realize, I mean, Rob will tell you, they're park geese, man. They're, you know, these are golf course geese. These live in people's yards. They're blah, 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 whatever, you know. I mean, these are not like, these geese have not migrated from Nanatuk, you know, Iceland or wherever to get down here. But, I mean, gosh dang, man, you've been mowing grass in your yard, doing honeydew chores for 4 months. That's, you know, you turkey hunted until it was over, and for 4 months you just slogged through miserable existence. Maybe you fish a few times, whatever, you know, but it's hotter than balls. And then all of a sudden, this first chance you get, whether it's dove hunting or a little teal hunting or a little goose hunting, like, here it is back. And it may not be the most romantic hunting experience of the year, but by gosh, it's the first one. And so that's what we did. That was the first episode. And we called it Home because, you know, the whole concept behind the story was, we're going to tell the story of the season. We're going to tell it from right here in the end of August, first of September, through the end of turkey season. And our episodes are going to spread out through there. And so, you know, where does all that start? Everything in your life starts right there at home, you know? I mean, every trip you leave from home, every trip you come back, the end of the trip is marked by home. And so what better story to tell about home than the correlation between the business that was supporting this film, you know, this kind of this video TV show thing, and home. I mean, it all kind of went together. And so the first half of it, we told the story of Rolling Thunder and how it came out of my garage and a bunch of tables we built out of plywood and 2x4s, and and a little, you know, little Asian duck call grad assistant at the technical college, you know, and long nights in the hotel room to where we are today in a beautiful shop with technology and actual employees, staff, and a CNC lathe, and, you know, this stuff that enables us to kind of get out of the shop and go market the company and go hunt. And then you got this awesome goose hunt. And so that was the first episode, and man, he showed it to me, and I was just like, holy cow, this is good, dude. Like, this is, it was a little sappy, you know, it was a little syrupy of, you know, hit you right in the feels. But my immediate reaction was, we're about to put out a marketing piece that has one hunt, and this is going to appeal to duck hunters. And we just shot geese. There's not a word in there about ducks or turkeys or anything else, and we just shot geese. And so it was kind of this light bulb, like multiple light bulbs went off. One was, I got a dude in Dillon that's a bad, bad man with that camera and that computer. That was the first one. The second one was, we tell a story, and the actual topic of the story is not nearly as important. I mean, the actual topic of the story is more important than actually what happens in the story. Like, people care about the story. They don't necessarily care about National Geographic quality footage. And so if you combine really, really good footage and the kind of shots that make you feel like you're there with a great story, if you put all that together into a project, people go nuts over it. And so we launched this episode, and I mean, it went bonkers. I mean,
I gotta ask, how did the conversation go with the gentleman
Heathcote is his name. Yeah, Jason Heathcote is his name. And Heathcote, I told you I'd tell you what he does or what he has done, and I mean, validate him. Like, Heathcote edited all of the Bone Collector television show for a long time. I don't know, 8 years, 9 years. The man knows his way around editing software. And he is really good. He's edited a bunch of the Small Town Hunting episodes. He has done just tons and tons of television show stuff. And his first version, there was nothing wrong with it. Nothing. Like, if you watched it, you'd be like, man, that's awesome. Like, good for y'all. You know, y'all got you a TV show. It wasn't like it was bad. It didn't communicate what this thing that we had in our heart that we were trying to communicate. And that's not Jason's fault at all. So I called, I mean, that after I watched Dylan's deal, I called Jason, and, you know, I just want to kind of circle back, and he was like, no problem. It'll be kind of awkward. I don't know how to tell you this about your feelings, and I certainly don't want to sound like I'm ungrateful, but I think I'm going to go in a different direction. You know, no fault of your different vision in mind, and I don't know, I wish to perceive this and not drag you down this path, but I didn't know it until I looked at the finished product, and so I just need to say, you did a great job, and I'm not upset at all. But, you know, my guy that filmed it edited this, and it's just got a lot different feel to it. And so I just want you to know, I want to use his deal. I want to pay for your time, and I want to still be friends. I don't want you to be mad at me because I'm not upset with you. I don't feel like you did a bad job or you cheated me or anything. I feel like you did an awesome job. I mean, he edited it, and frankly, he had all these places in there where I needed to say stuff, I needed to be interviewed, and I needed to kind of tell the story. And Rocky, man, we could have done it Jason's way, and you probably would have been because I think that we just hit it at a time when people were really interested in the story and good quality footage. There's no.
I'm losing you in and out.
You're losing me. I was just gonna say there's no hard feelings between me and Jason. I felt like he did an excellent job. It just, we kind of had a different vision. You know what I mean? He built a
Brian.
He built a Ford F-150, and we had a Chevy Tahoe in our mind, or whatever metaphor you want. You know, apple and orange. It's not that one's better than another. It's just and so it went good. He was very much a professional about it, and I mean, we've talked a bunch since, and you know, he watched Dylan's thing and sent me a text, and he was like, dude, there's no doubt in my mind you're making the right decision. And I was like, are you sure? Because the last thing I want is for you to be out there hating me. And he was like, dude, I 100% think it's better if the guy who films it edits it. And I was like, all right. And so, I mean, that's kind of where we went. So from there, you know, it was a big success. People really liked it. I got lots of heartfelt notes and messages, and, you know, I was amazed at the reaction it got from people. And so when we sat back down, me and Dylan did, and I was like, all right, look, here's the deal. You knocked it out of the park. And I don't know if that was just a flash in the pan or a one-time thing, or if you got this in you. But I said, pressure's on, bub. You know, you're going to have to figure out how to make number two better than number one. And I don't know if he made number two better than number one, but it was pretty doggone strong. And let's
talk about this a minute, if you don't mind.
All sure. Right.
There's no doubt in the quality of video that Dylan puts out. See, I think the secret to the sauce is Dylan's great footage and production, but also your combination of words you put behind it in the voiceover. Tell me about that. Tell me about that process for you.
I mean, it's a team effort. It's hard to say who pulls more. I mean, I would, if you asked me who pulls more weight, I would say Dylan does, because he does the filming and the editing. But what pulls the story together, I don't know. It's a team effort. Sometimes Dylan's like, man, I got this and this, and it would make a really good story if we said this. And he kind of gives me an idea and gets me started. Sometimes he's like, Spence, there ain't nothing here. And I'm like, buddy, yes, there is. There's this. And he's like, never thought about it that way. I mean, it is definitely a team effort. And I think he would tell you that if you asked him. I know he would tell you that. It goes both ways. So I could go through, you know, we're 18 episodes in. I could go through every episode and I could say, maybe that episode is a little weighted toward Dylan. Maybe that episode's a little weighted toward Spence. Maybe that one's a little bit weighted. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you could, I bet you if you counted it out, I bet you it's a 50-50, you know, who kind of had the idea for the episode. Who pulled the most weight working? Probably always Dylan. I mean, he's the guy that's up late at night and chopping up footage after.
No, I'm just saying the quality of the voiceover, what you write and what you read, and voiceover equals the quality of the video footage. It creates magic, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good combination. We constantly talk about it and think about it, and we probably overanalyze it a lot, and you know, I don't know. It's just we click. You know, we work well together. Dylan's one of the first people I've ever worked with that really kind of namby pamby. Weird as this sounds, I feel like he kind of gets me and my ears. And ultimately what I was trying to do in this project was communicate the DNA of our brand without just showing people products all the time. And so we've tried really hard to not make it about
hey, blow this duck call and kill your limit, or hey, use these decoys and, you know, the ducks will just give it up. Or, you know, we've tried to not make an infomercial. We've tried to not make it. But, you know, today we're out here in western Kansas and the wind's blowing out of the north and we're going to shoot them in the face, you know. And, you know, I mean, we've tried to be different. We've tried really hard to find storylines and angles of looking at stuff that's different than what people are used to seeing and what has been done before. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, every episode's not been a home run. There's not one episode that we put out that I feel like, you know, that was a half-assed effort. I feel like we've done our very best. But, you know, the metaphor we use and that I try to remind Dylan of is that, you know, the best baseball player in the world does not hit a home run every time. A lot of times he hits a single. A lot of times he hits a double. Sometimes he just strikes out. But there's a difference between a strikeout when you didn't give it your best effort and you didn't do your job of being prepared before you come to the plate, and a strikeout where you took it to a 3-2 count and you fouled the ball off 25 times, and by the time you struck out, that pitcher had thrown the ball, you know, 36 times across the plate. Like, there's a difference between that and swinging three times because you hadn't seen a 90-mile-an-hour pitch in the last 6 months. Those are different experiences. And the difference is preparation and what you do with the opportunity. And so do I feel like all of our episodes have been a home run or a grand slam? No, absolutely not. Some of them have been singles. Some of them have been doubles. There's probably even one or two that you'd look at and go, you know, I don't know if you would actually call – it's not really fair to call it a strikeout because they achieved a purpose, but I don't feel like we've put out any episodes where we didn't come to the plate prepared to see the ball thrown by the pitcher, if that makes any sense. I'm not trying to overutilize the metaphor, but so when we approach the next episode, when we approach the next story, when we approach the next season, that's the metaphor that we use is, okay, you know, nobody expects Albert Pujols to hit a grand slam every time he walks up to the plate. But what they expect is for a guy that has practiced his trade long and hard, who is well compensated for his trade, and who is adequately prepared to meet the objective, which is to hit the ball and put it in play when the pitcher delivers it, and to pick which one of those pitches is the best. And sometimes that's where we're at. Sometimes we're like, okay, we've got this, and we've got this, and we've got this. Which one of these would make the best storyline? We're there right now. We're at episode 9 right now in this season. We're about to drop South Carolina next week, and we're a little bit unsure about what we're going to do with chapter 10 of this season. We've got a pretty killer idea that we're working on that we're heavily leaning towards making chapter 1 of season 3 instead of chapter 10 of season 2. And so we're currently in a bit of a debate about, like, what should we do here? You know, if we don't do this, what should we do instead? You know, what? And so there's kind of picking, you know, when you walk up to the plate, at a minimum, you're going to get three pitches, right? So you don't have to swing at three pitches in a row, but at some point you're going to have to swing three times or you're going to get on base, you know, you're going to get walked. Like, you got to decide what to do. You got to decide which pitch. And so sometimes, you know, we're batting against a junk pitcher and we got to decide, you know, maybe laying down a bunt or just trying to put the bat on the ball is effective. And anyways, so it's a, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying about the voiceover. There's definitely a strong combination between the two of them. They work together and along those lines, man, we're constantly, Dylan edits better if I have the voiceover done, and I do the voiceover better if he has the editing done. So every single time I'm like, show me what you got so I can be inspired to write something. And he's like, write something so I can be inspired to edit something. And it's kind of like, all right, which one of us is going to move first? You know, I mean, it's a little bit of a stalemate, but I don't know. It's worked out so far pretty good.
Well,
Next week, look, I want to talk about a couple of your favorite episodes that y'all have put out.
Okay.
You know, we've kind of left the call company. We've kind of put it to the side. We'll, you know, to bring it up to speed, the call company itself next week. And
all right.
We'll try to put a nice bow on this story next week.
Okay.
I think that there's some stuff that we need to go back over, recap, and finish out in next week's episode.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Sure.
So, but I have enjoyed it, Spence. Great, great episode today.
Sure.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition, and I'm sorry that I've been on the road. You probably heard road noise the whole way. And anyway, but Spence, have a good weekend. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.